Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio. It's the second show in May and nearly the middle of the month already. We've got a football special with Dee Bradley from Durham Ladies and USA and Sam Thomas, coach at Principia College all the way over in Illinois, telling us about how he recruits girls and how he's looking to build a legacy at the college in girls football. We hope you enjoy the show. We start this week with Durham and USA professional footballer Dee Bradley. Well, everybody, joining me this week is a USA superstar footballer currently playing for Durham Ladies. It's Dee Bradley. Hi, Dee. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Really well, thank you. Appreciate you giving us your time. I know the end of season means your schedule becomes busy. How are you feeling currently at the moment?
I'm feeling really good, actually. I feel fit. I feel like the season's been tough, both mentally and physically. But as the season has progressed, I feel like I've been playing really well. So I'm happy personally how things are going. Of course, as a team, I think we've been cut short a bit, but that next year is always an option. And we're going to push for promotion next year.
Fabulous. And we'll come on to that towards the end. But if we could get the viewers and the listeners to get to know you a little bit better, perhaps we can wind it back to the start when you were young and you were growing up. Being from America, opportunities for ladies and girls football is known that it's better than in the UK. But how was it for you? When did you first find out you had a love for football?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I was, as soon as I was born, I had a football in my hands. I started playing with like a little local team when I was about 4 or 5 years old. I have a twin brother, so we always played together. As I got a bit older, around like 8, 9 years old, I started playing with the boys team, and my dad was my coach. So I played with my twin brother, and my dad was my coach, and I absolutely loved it. But with that, I played with a local girls team as well. So I was playing both with the girls and the boys, so I was getting double the football, which is every girl's dream, to be honest. But as I got older, about 13, 14 years old, I knew that if I wanted to make this work, I'd have to take a step forward in the competitive side of things. So I went to a travel team, and we traveled all across the country for football. And we went to the West Coast, went to California, we went to Texas, we went to Florida, we were all over. And it was the most incredible experience. And that's what led me to get seen by my college coach. And I played at Old Dominion for 5 years. And I absolutely loved it. It's very competitive. So it was a lot in the body, but it was an absolute dream. And I hurt my knee, unfortunately. So I had to do 5 years at Old Dominion.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, I think those 5 years helped me grow as a person. So yeah, that's just kind of a bit of background on my playing history. I played with boys up until about 12, 13 years old and got to play full competitive girls football.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds amazing. And thank you for touching on as you've gone forward. It really helps enlighten people a little bit more about you. So we will go back. You said you played in your brother's team, which was obviously very nice. Your dad was your coach. And you also felt that you got double the football because you played in a girls' team as well. That must have been amazing. Moving forward, when you said you had to step up a level, you went to a travelling team. What's that like to actually get on a plane to go to an away game rather than just in a car or on a coach?
Oh, I mean, not many people get that opportunity to do that in the first place. So to be able to do that, I have to give full credit to my parents. Because when I say we were away almost every weekend or even to travel to training an hour from.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of sacrifice in the terms of my parents' time, my time. I had to sacrifice a lot of social time with my friends.
Yeah.
And that's something that I was willing to do because I knew that I wanted to play football.
Yeah. And it is that really, isn't it? It truly is, even from a young age, especially these days, that you have to start sacrificing as a person. Eating right, training right.
Yeah, Absolutely. It's hard for people at a young age to kind of understand and comprehend that it takes a lot of sacrifice to play.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head, and that's what we're trying to instill into the girls that we help. It backs it up when players like yourself come on the radio and you meet the girls and you just hammer home the same point that you're never too young to start treating your body correctly and getting into your football.
Yeah, absolutely. You can never start too young. I think it's important to enjoy your football in the same breath. I think it's important to play different sports to see what you like. But in the same breath, I knew at a young age that playing professional was what I wanted to do. So it was easier for me to kind of give up a bit of social life and eat healthier and make sure that I was doing everything I possibly could to get to where I am today.
Yeah, perfect. So basically, because you had the vision in your head already of the plan for your future, it was still very hard. No sacrifice is easy, whatever it's for. But you had that soul ambition and drive to make sure you live the best you could, sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely can say that.
Perfect. And again, another great point that the girls that are listening and the girls from our football and all around the UK that listen and will definitely listen, knowing that you're on, will take heed of. And that's a great point. Thank you. You said you went to Old Dominion and you were there for 5 years. Obviously, most programmes are 4 years, aren't they? But you said you stayed on the extra year. I presume, as you've already brought into the conversation, that was because of your injury. If you don't mind talking about it, if you could tell us about the injury, how it happened, and the recovery.
Yeah, of course. So my senior year, my fourth year of college, I tore my ACL right in the beginning of the season. And as I'm sure every footballer can say, it was like my worst nightmare that happened. So I decided to take a fifth year. So I took a full year of recovery and came back and tried to play a fifth year. And I did that. I got through the season, but I knew something wasn't really right with my knee.
Right.
So after I finished that season, I had every intention to just come directly to Durham and play. But I found out after that season, I tore my ACL again in the same knee, and I was absolutely devastated. I thought that my playing career was over.
Yeah.
I thought that I wasn't going to be able to do it, this and that. But then after feeling sorry for myself, I decided that no, absolutely, I can do it. Players that have torn their ACL 3-4 times and are playing at the highest of levels, I felt like there's no reason for me not to at least try. So I got surgery right after that fifth year and rehabbed it. And then unfortunately, COVID hit. So I had a little bit of extra time to kind of make sure I was completely ready. And then in September of 2020, I moved to Durham and I've been here ever since and I love it.
Brilliant. That's a great message to people who are injured. If we could just slip back to that, if you don't mind. It's very rare, I suppose, that you do it so quickly, or is it rare? Did you come back too early? Was the first surgery not what it should have been, or was it just basically unlucky?
I think it was a bit of unluckiness. I think it's quite hard. I think my rehab and the first thing was great. I didn't hear anything after 3 months. I was still in a brace, to be honest. So it wasn't the best of rehab processes that I've heard of or experienced. And that was kind of hard to take as well, because I feel like I had a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth towards it all. And that's why I think I was so devastated the second time around, because mentally and physically it took past that first one that I didn't know if I wanted to do it again.
Right.
But the second time around, when I say it was night and day, I would say 4 days post-op, I was in a pool, I was moving my leg, I was on like this skier's edge thing at 4 weeks post-op.
That's
and
amazing.
4 weeks post-op, the first time around, I was still in a brace on crutches and wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think I have to give credit to the people I worked with the second time, because they didn't care that I did it once, they didn't care if I did it 7 times. They took me in and they believed in me and it helped me get to where I am now.
Brilliant. That's absolutely lovely to hear. We've got a girl currently that we work with, a young player, who has just turned 18. She was in the England squad for her age. She'd done her cruise ship just before the first lockdown of COVID over here, so a couple of years ago.
Oh, no.
And it took her ages to get her operation. She's been in and out as whether to play or not, and she phoned me literally Monday and said, I want to give it one last shot. So we're preparing a plan for her. So, you know, listening to you, perhaps meeting you and talking to you will hopefully give her that fillip, because she's such an amazing young player that it'd be sad to see it go to waste.
Yeah, absolutely. Please send my number over or anything.
Thank you. That would be
lovely.
If she
needs to talk about it. Yeah, absolutely. It's hard. You can't go through it alone.
No.
That's what I've learned.
No, and it's difficult, I suppose, when you overachieve her. She's got four brothers and sisters, so she has to split her parents' time with the rest of her family. And from what I've heard from her, and also Elenia, who we work with, who plays for Watford, and listening to you and speaking to you as well, it's nowhere near an easy process to digest mentally, is it? So you actually need someone to talk to when you need it, not when it fits in with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a minimum of 9 months to get through this process. And some people think, like 7 months, but no, you might think you're ready, but it's at least 9 months. And for me, the first time it took almost a year and a half. And being a year and a half out of football is so mentally hard, because all you want to do is be on the pitch.
Yes.
So if you don't speak about it, it makes it significantly harder to get through it. And to be honest, the people that don't really speak about it and try and keep motivated through it don't come back.
That's a real sad thing about it. What I was going to say was, you also good advert for colleges, because you were able to stay on and take that extra year. As long as you're doing well at your studies, is that an option for anybody?
Yeah, so because I had an injury, I was able to take that fifth year. And luckily, I had a coach that was willing to help me through, give me the option of staying a fifth year.
Yeah.
But there's also other ways to do a fifth year. So just say I come in as a freshman for my first year and I don't play minutes, but the second, third, and fourth year I play minutes. Because I didn't play minutes that first year,
yes,
there's an option to add that fifth year on if all goes well. So you can either choose to kind of grow into it and not play your first year and still take that extra year if that's what your coach is willing to do.
Right.
Every program's different, of course, but there's definite ways to stay longer and discuss it with a coach.
That's fabulous to hear, and great to know that the girls that we're sending, and you know a couple of them we're hoping to send, have that extra option as well, just in case, you know, things do go wrong. I mean, you can never tell when an injury is around the corner or anything. We're just going to finish off on the last negative bit before we come back to all the good stuff. An important point in people's lives, sporting people's lives, was COVID. It had an effect across the whole world. How did you find yourself keeping physically and mentally strong, being away from your family?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big homebody.
Yeah.
A big homebody. I miss home every day. But I know that, like I've said before, this is something that I've always, always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I think with that passion and drive I have, I knew that was something I was going to have to sacrifice as a bit of family time. But the thing that keeps me going is just wanting to be better. And I know that, yes, I kind of got my foot in the door with the team year, and I've hopefully made a name for myself in the sense that I know I can compete at this level. The want to be a better player is what keeps me going. And to be honest, I have such a great team around me as well that helps me want to be better and keep going and stay here and fight for that.
Brilliant, Dee. Well, we'll come on to some better stuff now, obviously. You've found yourself at Durham. Tell us how that move came about.
Yeah, so I actually had two former teammates that were playing at Durham that were at Old Dominion as well.
Okay.
So I had that connection. So I just reached out to them to see if I could potentially, if they thought it was feasible, if they thought I would be able to do it. And they sent over the manager's number and I got in contact with him. And I had the option of doing the university side of things. So I did that last year. But to be honest with you, the master's program I was in didn't suit me. So I stopped that after the first year, but I continued playing with the first team. And luckily he gave me the opportunity to play. And he was quite honest with me and said that he didn't guarantee me anything. But all I honestly ever wanted was just an opportunity to prove that I could do it. So I have to give major credit to Lee and Durham as a whole for giving me that opportunity.
Thank you, Dee. What a brilliant interview. We loved all of that and your pain, but your hard work of going through your injuries and everything is just inspirational for everybody. And now, after a short set of commercials, we've got the coach from Principia College in Illinois, Sam Thomas.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Today I'm joined by somebody, he's a very good friend of mine, but he's slightly different from the normal female professional player we have on. He's a college coach, he's a recruiter in the USA and the world. And I'm delighted to say, this week we're joined by Sam Thomas, all the way from Principia College in Illinois. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hi John, I'm great. How are you doing today?
Really well, thank you. Really, really well. Lovely for you to join us and give us an insight on part of what we do. We obviously like to send girls to America to play football under education, but you're the people we need to impress. You are a coach. We'll get the listeners to know a little bit more about you, then go on to what you're doing at the moment. If you could just start off by telling us, you know, your love for football, how it started and when you got into the game.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be on. It's a pleasure to get a chat with friends. Yeah, so when I was young, I've got three brothers, and as soon as each of us could walk, our parents started throwing us in sport. And so go to golf and tennis and hockey and football and baseball and this, that, and the other. And so the three that stuck for me when I was little was baseball, basketball, and obviously football. And played those all growing up, all the way through high school. So through age 18, I played all three. And then when I got to college, I had to drop one. Most people drop two and just focus on one if you're doing most. But I went to a small school, which afforded me the chance to do multiple. And so for me, that was football and baseball. Now, the reason that I was able to do that was I was a goalkeeper. I was never anyone who was going to blow an opponent away with skills or speed. But I had a good frame and I had good hands. And so I made my trade in the goal. And yeah, after 2 years of baseball, I had an injury which ended my pitching career. And so I was able to focus solely on football. And that was honestly kind of when the passion fully took over. It was always a sport I played, always a sport I loved. But I didn't have the same connection to the sport that I did with baseball, because baseball was very much my main passion sport. And so I kind of arrived late to the real love of the game that I have now. And I think that gave me even more of an appreciation for it. It was one of the driving forces into becoming a coach. So it was a bit of a different journey than most might have, but it got me to where I am nonetheless.
Fab, and obviously you mentioned there was three sports. What was the awareness like for soccer, as it's called in America, compared to the other sports? Sure. Was it quite mainstream?
For youth sports, yes. So in youth sports, soccer is the most played sport in America.
Wow.
However, as you get to age 14 to 18, it is also the sport that has the greatest drop-off in rates of players who stop playing. So, you know, there wasn't the awareness when we were young of everyone watching the Premier League and watching the other European competitions, because it just wasn't televised at the time like it is now. And the TV rights for the Premier League here in the States are ridiculous. So that access is great for youth players now.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, it was just the go-to sport that every parent put their kid in. And when it came to that truly competitive teenager age, that was when you saw the drop-off, because we didn't have the coaching to develop really elite levels of skill.
Right.
And so when it became truly competitive beyond the youth scope, then there was a big drop-off. But for kids, you know, parents love dropping kids off and getting 2 hours of their day back. And it's the perfect group activity, team activity, tire the kids out, send them home, and they'll take a nap for the parents. You know, it was one of those things culturally. But it's really grown, which obviously, as a lover of the sport, is the biggest thing for me that I love.
So, interestingly, you said that obviously the drop-off is the highest rate, and the initial reaction would be because it's not considered as a main sport in America. But you said it was obviously down to the coaching. Is that because as a person or as a young adult, if you want to do coaching, you're encouraged to go down the more natural sports, you know, baseball, basketball, NFL?
Maybe. I know that the drop-off rate for youth athletes nowadays is not what it was in the 90s. The coaching has improved significantly. The exposure to the game has just, you know, exploded. And so I think that started to change now. But in my experience growing up, there wasn't much culture around diverting athletes into coaching.
Right.
Coaching was something that former athletes kind of fell into, as I did. Nowadays, that's starting to shift where, you know, I'm starting to recruit athletes, and even through their playing years, when you ask them, you know, what do you want to be? And some want to be an accountant, some want to be a structural engineer.
Yeah.
Some are saying, I want to coach. I want to operate in that environment. And obviously, that's the kind of stuff that I really resonate and respond to. But there wasn't much of a culture of expectation of that being a pathway for many when we were younger, regardless of sport. It was just kind of, you play until you're done playing, and if you're good enough, then you get to go coach.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously, that's something that, as you said, you latch onto and you're happy with, the fact that there is the opportunity, as you call it, the pathway to go into coaching at a younger age.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And that's good. So you obviously grew up, you loved football. How did you get into football at that next level?
Yeah, so obviously, as a goalkeeper, you're in a little bit more high demand for a position with a little bit less competition.
Yeah.
If you're quality, right? And that was the situation I found myself in. So when I was playing in high school, I didn't really have to fight for minutes. And then the same thing happened in college. And as it became my year-round sole sport, then I saw my progress within it, obviously, you know, accelerate. But I think it was specific to being a goalkeeper and being a pretty well-rounded athlete, made it simpler for me to continue ascending the ladder of playing. Whereas, you know, with my athletic platform, if I were required to go with my feet or particularly fast, I would have struggled. And that's one of the reasons that I couldn't play basketball in college.
Right.
Was I'm not a 6'7", you know, athlete who runs a 4.2 40.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not my platform, but I was good between the posts, and that made it for me.
Fabulous. Great to get some insight. So you graduated. What was your career like?
So I didn't play in any of the bigger leagues. I don't think it's still in place now. I think it's evolved. But the league I played in for 3 years, my last 2 years of college and my first year after college. It was called the PDL, Premier Development League, I believe is what it was called.
Okay.
And it was kind of like an in-between between the lower level pros in the United States and college. Obviously, college athletes can't get paid. Well, they can now in certain ways, but they couldn't back in my day. And that afforded the opportunity for some graduates to get paid to play over the summer as kind of a route into the professional game. So it was more exposure, more games, you know, usually higher level coaching, higher level competition. So I played in that league for 3 years over summers between college seasons and really enjoyed it. And then upon graduating, I did a couple tryouts, went here and there. And as I was going through that process, my assistant coach in college got a head coach position all the way out in Oregon and asked me if I wanted to come help him out for a season while I was still chasing this journey. And I needed the money. So I said yes. Headed out there, and that was what I just fell in love with. I stopped wanting to chase playing and wanted to dive headfirst into coaching. As soon as I got my teeth into it, it was all over.
Well, that's fab. We're going to come on to in a little bit about the full circle, as it were, which I think is an amazing story. So you fell into coaching, but you actually found it was for you. I'm quite similar. I mirrored what you were saying when I didn't have good feet. I couldn't go around people. But because I'm not a goalkeeper size either, I found my niche by tackling people and winning the ball and giving it to the people that could play. I found that was what I could do. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But again, I fell into coaching. It's one of them things, isn't it? I think that if you're passionate about it, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a young player develop into the best they can be.
Absolutely. Thing that I say all the time, my favorite part about coaching are the light bulb moments. When you see someone have that light bulb go off, you know that they have just discovered something that they're going to retain forever. And that's a rung in the ladder of their development. Every light bulb is another rung in the ladder.
Yeah.
And so that's my absolute favorite bit, is when you can actually tangibly track, oh, they just overcame that hurdle. Oh, they just took that next step. Now I know we get to move on to the next. We get to move on to the next. Those are my favorite parts.
And that's a very good point, because all coaches are different and there's plenty of coaches out there that are better than me. But I do find that some coaches try and rush everything at once. And there's nothing wrong with showing different things, but you've got to do it at their own speed. And you're right, you described it perfectly, that light bulb moment when you think they've got it.
Yeah, it's taking a skill and making it habit, right? And that's when I was a younger coach, and I still am a relatively young coach by most metrics, but when I was first getting started in coaching, I didn't have the perspective to know that you can't coach an athlete on everything all at once, because that was my learning style. I wanted to be told everything I was doing wrong, everything I could be doing better. That was how I wanted to receive my information. I didn't realize that most don't work that way. And so as you're helping athletes develop, that can be a very overwhelming thing. And particularly, and if we're getting into the weeds about the level that I coach in college, particularly for college-age athletes, there are so many things on their mind when they're in school and they've got, you know, 3 to 6 hours of class every day. They've got social responsibilities.
Yeah.
They're away from home, away from family for maybe the first time for most. And then they have to, on top of that, worry about their football. If you give them too much, you know, you're going to fry the brain. It won't be able to keep up. And so making sure that you understand your athletes, understand their learning style, how they best receive that information, then once you have that relationship and that understanding, you can coach to their learning ability. That little dance in there to figure that out, and the relationship building part of that process is probably the other favorite part about coaching that I really fell in love to working with the college athletes.
Yeah.
Because you really get a sense of a person at that time. You get a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that carries on beyond the field. That's, you know, when your former players are having kids and you get to go to the baby shower, they're getting married and you're getting invited to the wedding. Those are the fun parts about coaching that you hang on to after they step off the field.
Thank you, Sam. A brilliant, brilliant part one. Something I can relate to, and all the listeners. There's nothing like seeing youngsters develop. Now, after our final set of commercials, it's our SLB Sports Roundup.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks, Sam. What a fantastic interview. Looking forward so much to part two next week. And we finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup, featuring golf, horse racing, darts, cricket, motorsport, NBA, and of course football. We start with golf, and on the PGA Tour, it was the Wells Fargo Championship from the TPC Potomatic at Avonvale Farm. It was won by Max Homa on -8. 2 shots clear of veteran Keegan Bradley, and Matt Fitzpatrick of England, plus Cameron Young in a three-way tie for second place. This week, they're playing the AT&T Byron Nelson from the TPC Craig Ranch in Texas the week before the USPGA Championship, the second major of the season. On the European Tour, it was the British Masters from the Belfry, and it was won by Torborg Olesen, his first victory for 4 years, having an awful time, both personally and professionally, was cleared earlier this year of a sexual assault charge. It's affected his golf, obviously, and he was back with a bang. He finished eagle birdie on the final two holes on Saturday to put himself into a three-shot lead. However, he bogeyed five holes in the first 15 and was two shots down, standing on the 17th tee. But yet again, he finished eagle birdie with two long monster putts to take the title. Well done to Torborg Olesen. Second place was Stefan Soderberg, one shot back on minus nine. Three-way tie for third, Connor Syme, Justin Walters and Richie Ramsey, all on minus eight. This week, they've got the Sudal Open from the Rincon International Golf and Country Club in Schilke, Belgium. The LPGA is back this week with the Founders Cup from the Upper Montclair Country Club in New Jersey. On to horse racing, last week it was Derby and Oaks Trials week from Chester, dominated by Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. We come out of the week with the Derby Trials that were won by Aidan O'Brien's horses, Changing of the Guard, Star of India, United Nations and possibly the best of the lot, Stone Age. And the Oaks Trials, Thoughts of June and History. One bad bit of news for Aidan O'Brien is that his Derby favourite, Luxembourg, who placed in the Guineas, is out with a muscle injury. But Tuesday, who is his Oaks main fancy and favourite for the race, is still ready to roll. The Kentucky Derby, the Run for the Roses, was held last weekend at Churchill Downs, and it was won by 80-1 shot Rich Strike, the longest price winner since 1913. And he beat Epicenter and Zandon, who was our fancy, came there to win the race but couldn't go through, and both were run down by Rich Strike. This week, we go to York for more classic trials. Look out for Emily Upjohn in the Musidora. She'll be trialling out for the Oaks. And Desert Crown has been backed in tremendously in the last 2 or 3 weeks. For Michael Stout, hasn't run since last year. Look out for him in the Dante to stake his Derby claim. Others to look out for at York next week are Dragon Symbol in the Duke of York Stakes, who makes his debut for the Roger Varian Yard. Razzle, if he runs in the Paddy Power Making Less flat handicap. And Dependent on the Ground, if it's soft, Trushan in the Yorkshire Cup. If it's not soft, he won't run, and look out for the old veteran Stradivarius. This weekend, we've got to look out for Baid, our long-range fancy for the Lock-In Stakes at Newbury. He should take all the beating. On to darts, and night 13 of the Premier League was held in Glasgow, and it was another win for the ferret, the Welsh wizard Johnny Clayton. He took 5 points, beating Michael Van Gerwen 6-3 in the final, who took 3 points. The two defeated semi-finalists, Gary Anderson and Michael Smith, both take 2 points. The top four in the standings see Johnny Clayton extending his lead. 34 points, now 6 points in front of Michael Van Gerwen on 28. James Wade, a brilliant third place on 25. And Peter Wright is 5 points back in fourth on 20. A note on cricket, and Ben Stokes has been named as the replacement for Joe Root for England's Test captain. We hope Ben doesn't find all the strains and tribulations of captaincy affecting his play. He's England's best player by a long way. On to motorsport. No action on two wheels last week. MotoGP's back this weekend with the Grand Prix of France from the Bugatti circuit. The standings are led by Fabio Quartararo on his Monster Energy Yamaha. He's on 89 points. Second place, Alexei Espargaro on the Aprilia, 7 back on 82. And third place is tied between Enea Bastianini for the Grassini Racing Ducati team, and Alex Rins on the Suzuki X-Star. They're on 69. World Superbikes are back next weekend on the 20th of May with the Estoril round. The standings are led by Alvaro Bautista on the Ducati factory team bike, 109. Second place, Jonathan Rea riding the Kawasaki factory bike on 91. And a little gap back to current champion Toprak Ratsaglioglu for the factory Yamaha team on 64. British Superbikes are back on the 20th of May also with round 3 and races 7, 8 and 9 from Donington Park National. Bradley Ray leads the standings on 102 points, riding the OMG Racing Yamaha, 6 points clear of Glen Irwin, who hat-tricked the first weekend for Honda Racing UK.
And 10 points further back, Rory Skinner for the FS3 Racing Kawasaki on 86. Speedway Grand Prix is back this weekend with the Grand Prix of Poland from Warsaw. Bartosz Szmarzlik miraculously and brilliantly took the first round. He heads the standings on 20 points. Second place is Polish compatriot Magic Janowski on 18. And third place, Danish flyer Mikkel Mikkelsen on 16. On to four wheels and NASCAR. Last weekend saw the Cup Series race at Darlington from Darlington Raceway. And it was won by Joey Logano in his Ford Mustang for Team Penske. He took 58 points from the race. Tyler Reddick was second in his Chevy Camaro for Richard Childress Racing on 37 points. And Justin Haley, also in the Chevy Camaro, but for Cowlick Racing, he was third, taking 34 points. The standings, though, are still led by Chase Elliott, driving a Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsport, 453. He's 65 points in front of William Byron. Same car, same team, 388. Also on 388 is Ryan Blaney, driving the Ford Mustang for Team Penske, but he's third due to less wins. This weekend, it's a Cup Series race at Kansas from Kansas Speedway. IndyCar are back this weekend with the GMR Grand Prix from the Indianapolis circuit, but using turns 1 and 2 of the famous oval and then the infield circuit. Alex Palou is top of the standings for Chip Ganassi on 144, 3 points ahead of Scott McLaughlin from Team Penske on 141, and his Team Penske's teammate Joseph Newgarden is third on 135. This is obviously a warm-up because there's two races in May, the GMR Grand Prix in Indianapolis, and then, using the famous Brickyard Oval on the 29th of May, the Indianapolis 500. On to Formula E. This week they're back in Berlin for the Germany Prix with two rounds, 7 and 8. Stoffel Vandoorne leads the standings for the Mercedes EQ team on 81 points, 6 clear of Jean-Éric Vergne for the DS Chatita team on 75, just 3 back to Mitch Evans for Jaguar TCS Racing on 72. Formula One hosted the inaugural Miami Grand Prix last weekend. What a show it was. A much better performance for Mercedes. However, Lewis Hamilton yet again fell foul of the safety car. He would have finished 5th, best of the rest behind Ferrari and Red Bull. But a safety car came out allowing his teammate to skip past him on a time-restricted pit stop, meaning George Russell was 5th and Lewis was 6th. But still, a better showing from Mercedes, but also still a long way off from the Red Bull and Ferrari. It was a win for Max Verstappen, another brilliant drive, starting 3rd off the grid, past Carlos Sainz into the first corner, and then hunted down and past Charles Leclerc, who, despite some brilliant driving and some aggressive attempts, just didn't have the straight line speed of the Red Bull, who breezed past him, but in turn, the Ferrari didn't have the speed, even with DRS, to get back past the Red Bull. Two brilliant racers driving in a brilliant race. So Max Verstappen took the win, 26 points for a win and a bonus point for the fastest lap. Second place, Charles Leclerc. Third place, his teammate, Carlos Sainz. The standings are led still by Charles Leclerc on 104 points, but it's a reduced margin again to Max Verstappen, who either wins or doesn't finish. He's 19 back on 85. And Sergio Perez is third on 66. The standings see Ferrari still out in front on 157, but again a reduced margin, with the Red Bull closing down to 6 on 151, with Mercedes team a distant third in 95. On to NBA and the conference semi-finals. A best of 7, as it always is, like the playoffs and the finals will be, where the highest seeded team has the first two games at home. Games 3 and 4 are the lowest seeded team of the two. And then they alternate in games 5, 6 and 7, with the highest seeded team getting 4 of the 7 games if they're needed. So we start off in the East with the Heat versus the 76ers. And they've played 4 games. Heat 106, 76ers 92. Heat 119, 76ers 103. 76ers 99, Heat 79. 76ers 116, Heat 108. So after 4 games, the series is tied at 2-2. Then we go to the Bucks versus the Celtics. Celtics 89, Bucks 101. Celtics 109, Bucks 86. Bucks 103, Celtics 101. So after 3 games, the Bucks lead the series 2-1. Despite having lost 1 home field advantage, they won it back in game 3. To the West, the Suns versus the Mavericks. Suns 121, Mavericks 114. Suns 129, Mavericks 109. Mavericks 103, Suns 94. Mavericks 111, Suns 101. So after 4 games, that series is also tied at 2-2. And the final one is the Golden State Warriors versus the Grizzlies. Grizzlies 116, Golden State Warriors 117. Grizzlies 106, Golden State Warriors 101. Golden State Warriors 142, Grizzlies 112. So the Golden State Warriors are 2-1 up with a home field to play in Game 4. The games will be played all through this week and we should know the conference finalists this time next week. Football, Premier League, Brentford 3, Southampton 0, Burnley 1, Aston Villa 3, Chelsea 2, Wolves 2, Crystal Palace 1, Watford 0, Brighton 4, Manchester United woeful 0, Liverpool 1, Tottenham 1, Norwich 0, West Ham 4, Leicester 1, Everton 2, Arsenal 2, Leeds 1, and Manchester City 5, Newcastle 0. These set of results really help Manchester City. They're now 4 points clear with 3 games to play. And it looks like the title could be going their way after a brilliant performance against Newcastle. Liverpool looked a bit nervy, maybe a little bit tired, and drew 1-1 to an excellent defensive performance by Tottenham. Manchester City lead the way, as we said, by 4 points. Third place Chelsea, fourth place Arsenal. And that game that's coming up next week is going to be a blockbuster. The fixtures coming up this week are Aston Villa versus Liverpool, Leeds versus Chelsea, Leicester versus Norwich, Watford versus Everton, Wolves versus Manchester City, and Tottenham versus Arsenal. That all-important game for fourth place. The weekend fixtures see Tottenham versus Burnley, Wolves versus Norwich, West Ham versus Manchester City, Watford versus Leicester, Leeds versus Brighton, Aston Villa versus Crystal Palace, Everton versus Brentford, Newcastle versus Arsenal, and Southampton versus Liverpool. The UEFA Champions League saw Villarreal get knocked out by Liverpool. 2-0 down from the first leg, Villarreal had a brilliant first half, were 2-0 up, and chances to go in front overall. However, what Jurgen Klopp must have said at halftime, I really don't know, but Liverpool came out, dominated and scored 3 times to win the tie 5-2 on aggregate. Real Madrid 3, Manchester City 1. And this was another unbelievable fairy tale. Manchester City, 4-3 up from the home leg in one of the best games we've ever seen, took the lead midway point in the second half to go 5-3 up on aggregate with everybody thinking it was over. 86 minutes gone and Real Madrid pull one back to make it 1-1 on the evening and 5-4 to Manchester City overall. And then in injury time, they scored to go 2-1 up on the night and 5-5 on aggregate. And then Karim Benzema got the winner, as he always does, in extra time. And Real Madrid now play Liverpool in the final of the Champions League. We finish with the final weekend in the WSL. The results being West Ham 0, Arsenal 2, Aston Villa 0, Birmingham 1, Tottenham 1, Leicester 0, Chelsea 4, Manchester United 2, Reading 0, Manchester City 4, and Brighton 1, Everton 1. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with Chelsea being crowned champions again, this time by 1 point from Arsenal. And it was tense. It wasn't quite as simple as Chelsea beating Manchester United 4-2. Manchester United were 1-0 and 2-1 up. But some inspired substitutions at half-time by Emma Hayes saw the game-changer G come on and she really pulled the strings and Chelsea ran out deserved champions. Arsenal had a brilliant season in second and then the battle for third was won by Manchester City, who won at Reading anyway 4-0 to make sure they were third. But Manchester United's fate was sealed as soon as they lost to Chelsea. A great season for all teams. Manchester United, still the youngest team when they were founded, and also pretty much with age. They had a great season and they're still playing catch up, but I'm sure they'll get there. At the other end of the table, it was Birmingham who were relegated. Sad for them, and they'll be replaced by Liverpool, who were champions of the championship. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, that's the end of another great show, and pretty much the middle of May already. Where is this year going? We'd like to thank you for your constant support, keeping us on the air and making sure we bring you great content. We hope you enjoyed this week where we had Dee Bradley from Durham Ladies, but born in America with Irish parents, so she could play nationally for either America or Ireland, going through details of both her ACL injuries, which wasn't easy, and her hopes for the future. And then Sam Thomas, coach at Principia College. He's looking to build his own legacy at the college by building a girls' college football team. They have mainly girls from America, but also girls from international countries that can play football. It was brilliant. I loved interviewing both of them, and I hope you enjoyed it too. And a final thank you to Johan, Raffaella, and the amazing team at UK Health Radio for their continued support. We'll see you all next week. Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop me now. Having a good time, having a good time. You're a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, go, go. There's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic man. Don't stop me now. If you wanna have a good time.